Welcome to NetFront Presence. I'm Matt DeFrance of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, joined by Nathan Mills, also of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Nathan, happy Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to all of our listeners out there. Thanksgiving is kind of a special time, so to speak, in the NHL because it serves as a checkpoint. It's been, for maybe the last 10 to 12 years, a kind of a who's who in the league. At Thanksgiving, you check in, you see where you are in the standings. About three quarters of the teams currently in a playoff spot will make the playoffs. So that leaves a little bit of wiggle room. About four teams a year on average will flip, go from out to in and out. As we look at the St. Louis Blues right now, they are on the outside looking in, and they have some work to do.
Yeah, some work to do is probably the nicest way you could possibly put it. Yeah. You know, listen, this isn't a last place team, but it's close, right? You know, and this is the point where we start to see standing stabilize. And if you want to make a move, the time is of the essence. You know, it's, listen, there's a lot of hockey left to play, but we know that because of the way things start to stabilize around the league, that there's not as many teams as you can jump. So the opportunities will get smaller and smaller, fewer and fewer. And this does not look like a team at this point ready to take advantage of those opportunities.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about that we're 24 games into the season. There's still approximately three quarters of the year left, 5 months to go. Yep. And this is such a meaningful point in the season when you look at the standings around the league. And for the Blues, you know, they got 21 points in 24 games. They're 6 points back of Utah for the second wild card spot in the West. And as you mentioned, you know, they're closer to last place than they are to a playoff spot. Nashville's the last team in the West, last team in the league at 18 points. So there's a bit of a gap, obviously. And to order to get to a playoff spot, the Blues will have to jump six teams. Yeah. And it's not quite time to start scoreboard watching. They need to take care of their own business, right? But when you look at the history of teams that are at least 6 points out of a playoff spot, since 2013-14, that's when the league changed their playoff format. Teams that are 6 points out, at least 6 points out of a second wildcard spot, they've only made the playoffs 7 out of 57 times. So that's 12.3%. Not really a good record for the Blues. The things that they do have going in their favor is that they have been the exception to the rule in each of the past three seasons. Last season, they were on the outside looking in on Thanksgiving. They were 2 points out of a playoff spot. They made the playoffs 2 years ago and 3 years ago, I guess, as well. They were in the playoffs, fell out of a playoff spot by the time the postseason rolled around. So this would have to be the fourth season in a row that they are the exception. And I don't know if that's going to be the way it works out.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it at this point, right? The opportunities that have been there have not been seized, or have, you know, early in the season, right? It was pucks not bouncing their way. Now it kind of seems just to be nothing bouncing their way, you know? And so if those opportunities getting smaller, I think, you know, you're right. It's not the time for scoreboard watching. It's the time to lock in. You know, it's like the question when you and I started talking about this before we were recording, the question popped in my mind. You, like, did you think at the beginning of this season that at Thanksgiving there was any way we would be looking at this going, oh, these guys are among the 12%, you know, have to be among the 12% to sneak into the playoffs after being at this point and at Thanksgiving?
Like, no, no way. Yeah.
It feels like, it doesn't look like it, but it feels like the wheels have come off completely to me in some ways. And so, like, I'm wondering, Matt, and I want to ask you, like, is there anything to be, and I'm going to, you know, use one of those tie-ins we've been working on. It's Thanksgiving. Is there anything to be thankful for at this point in the season?
Oh, man. So I, let's see.
Oh, well, oh man.
In the grand scheme of things, that you can kind of depends on what colored glasses you're wearing, right? If you're wearing your powder blue and yellow glasses, and you say, well, Devorsi's looked okay, Snedrud has had his moments, Broberg has been probably their best player of the year. Those are good things for the future of the team. If you're looking probably through regularly tinted glasses, you look at this as a huge disappointment.
So just glasses, just regular.
Just glasses. Yeah,
just normal glasses. Yeah.
Just normal glasses. You look at this as just a huge disappointment because of where the expectations were, where they finished the season last year, that run they made, really how the first round ended, thinking that they should have been in the final eight teams in the league in the playoffs if they hold on for a couple more seconds in Winnipeg. So it's a huge disappointment. And I think that's in kind of the big picture terms. In the smaller view, you know, you look at the record right now, 7-10-7. And we've talked about this before. What if half of those overtime games go their way? Yeah. Right? You don't expect a team to be 0-7 in overtime. But what if half of those overtime games go their way? And let's say they go 4-3 instead of 0-7. And now you're looking at a team with 25 points and they're 2 points out of a playoff spot. And suddenly you feel a lot better about where they're at on Thanksgiving. And it's just like, I don't feel like they're very far, just from that point of view.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah.
But in the standings, it feels so very far because of how they've played in the early going. And really, there's so many different areas of their game that have come and gone. It's been a lot that has changed throughout the season. I mean, you've had sort of inconsistent production from Robert Thomas. I mean, Justin Falk has more goals than the rest of the defensemen combined. You know, Jordan Kyrou's production kind of in and out. You know, he's obviously been scratched this year. Braden Schenn, Pavel Buchnevich have had really bad offensive years. And then the goaltending was pretty horrid in the first month of the season. And now they've been kind of an above average unit in the last month. So you've had a lot of things go in and out that have kind of, like we have talked about earlier, like a game of whack-a-mole. You know, like you're trying to fix one issue and then boom, another one pops up, and then you're trying to shore up the defense and boom, now you can't score. Like, it's just a lot of different things that I don't know how they solve all of them at one time when they just kind of keep moving around.
Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned the consistency, right? Going in and out. One of the things that I noticed on this road trip, and specifically with the overtime games, is it kind of seems like, you know, since the goaltending has stabilized, at least, right, those first handful of losses were ugly. But it kind of seems like recently the Blues kind of just played to the talent of the team opposite them. Like, they rise to the challenge. They just don't necessarily overcome said challenge. And so, you know, we're seeing them play decent hockey through three periods, and then overtime just seems to get away from them every time. And we've seen that be everything from, you know, not getting possession at all, right, to bad turnovers in the neutral zone that lead to rushes, to, you know, just everything. And so it kind of feels like overtime, in a way, has been a microcosm of some of the things that we've seen, you know, throughout the season in general, you know, not just in regulation or overtime, but, you know, the results have been a microcosm of that, is what it feels like to me.
Yeah. And honestly, like, you, when you think about it, overtime as a microcosm, we look at Braden Schenn and Pavel Buchnevich and the seasons that they've been having overall, and how many overtime goals they've been on the ice for. So many that you didn't even see them in overtime on Wednesday night in New Jersey. Like, the Blues played 3 minutes of overtime hockey, and I believe Thomas and Kyrou each had a second shift before Schenn and Buchnevich. Like, Schenn and Buchnevich did not play in overtime. So there's kind of a looking at the usage of players in overtime by Jim Montgomery and his staff, and seeing, hey, like, this is what's happened in previous games. Like, you know, I can think off the top of my head, in that Seattle game where Shane Wright scores, it's Schenn on the ice. That Philadelphia game at home, you know, they lost in a shootout, but Buchnevich is on the ice when he has that turnover, and Zegras has a penalty shot. In Toronto, Buchnevich is on the ice when they lose a corner battle. Philadelphia. Buchnevich is on the ice when they kind of a mix up with him and Cam Fowler about who to take, you know, whether it's Sanheim or whoever else was on the boards there for the Flyers. And then in New Jersey, like, you can see, like, Shannon Buchnevich did not get ice time in overtime. So it's kind of interesting to see that happening, what kind of changes the coaching staff can make in overtime to A, their tactics, or B, their usage. I mean, even when I look at the overtime goals that the Blues have given up recently, they're goals that the Blues aren't actively hunting for themselves. And what I mean by that is, like, when they enter the zone, they become impatient, they come out of the zone, they try to get it with all of the speed, and they'll get a rush chance somehow, right? And, like, that happened in Philadelphia just because of it was poor coverage and they went on a 2-on-0. Right. But against the Devils, it was kind of an offensive zone cycle, kind of crisscrossing, overlapping, in kind of losing coverage, where they had kind of went in circles enough times that Fowler and Kyrou didn't know who had Simon Nemec on the back door, and there the game's over. Toronto, it's a board battle in the offensive zone that leaves, you know, William Nylander on the far side wide open. That Seattle game that we talked about with Shane Wright, it was another overlap crisscross situation where the Blues lose coverage. So these are, like, offensive zone overtime goals, aside from that Philadelphia game up there, where that's the kind of offense that the Blues haven't been producing in overtime because they're so dead set on going in and out of the zone and trying to create speed.
I'm so glad that you mentioned Shen and Buchnevich, because, you know, the thing in this road trip, another thing that I noticed was, like, this team, man, they just need a spark. It's just there. And I don't mean, like, the kind of move like they made last year, trading for Cam Fowler and bringing him in. That was a spark last year. But I mean, on the ice, this team needs a spark. And a lot of times Shen is that guy, you know, whether it's picking a fight or, you know, making the right, you know, big play, big hit at the right time. And it doesn't seem that there's a lot of that coming out of him this year either. There's not a lot of it coming out of anybody, it doesn't feel like. And so, you know, I don't know where that comes from. I don't know where they find that spark, and I don't know where they find the, you know, they settle down and get into a groove. But it doesn't, kind of looks a little, even though they are, you know, playing up to their opponents, it almost feels a little rudderless at times.
Yeah, and you know, for those two guys in particular, I thought that when they had them together with Dalibor Dvorsky, like, that line actually generated a decent amount in, I think it was Philly, Islanders, and the Rangers. Was it all three of those games? All three of those. Look, yeah, it was Flyers, Islanders, Rangers, and then they changed all the lines against the Devils. But that Shen, Dvorsky, Buchnevich line, like, it seemed to produce something. And, you know, Shen finally broke his goal drought. He had a goal against the Islanders, goal against the Rangers. Buchnevich, you know, finally got even strength points with some assists, and, like, it just seemed like there was in a better spot than when they left, but it's still not enough, right? They still are going to need a lot more from a lot of other guys, including Shen Buchnevich, Thomas Kyrou, Holloway, all of the defensemen besides Justin Falk. In terms of offense, we know what Broberg and Parayko can do defensively, but this is a group that needs a lot from everyone, and they have not been getting a lot from everyone this season.
Do you think, you know, we saw this week Cam Fowler, after scoring a goal, lift the metaphorical monkey off his back, right? Do you think there are a lot more monkeys on a lot more backs, and that may be kind of, you know, sucking all the room out of the, or all the air?
Yeah,
the
I mean, there's probably a baboon on Shen's back still. There might be a gorilla on Buchnevich. I mean, I guess those would be more apes. Are those apes, or is a baboon a monkey? I don't.
I need you to know that not only did they tell me there would be no math, they also told me there would be no science in this.
I mean, I'm not up on my primates.
I'm not up on my great apes. I do believe, though, that they would be more apes than monkeys. Yeah, you would probably need to go smaller than baboon, I would think.
Okay, so I mean, we're talking like a little, was it a,
like a rhesus monkey,
like a chipukin, what is it, what is that one?
Oh, I don't think I've ever heard of that.
Oh, I don't know if it's right or not, but I mean, yeah, I mean, there's probably a gorilla, there's probably an orangutan, a howler maybe out there,
Oh yeah.
a gibbon perhaps.
This is my favorite segment we've ever done in NetFront Presences, is just naming monkeys.
Just trying to see how many primates we can name.
Yeah, I see you're naming like species of monkeys and apes. I would just name like cartoon monkeys because that's all I
Here's
know.
Curious George is on Jimmy Snooker's back.
Oh, see, maybe that's why he's been pretty decent at points. Like George is helping him out. The man in the yellow hat's over there by the goal, you know?
I do think there's a lot of something on someone's back across the roster. I mean, I looked it up a few weeks ago, but if you sort the entire league by number of points, and kind of line up all the players, forwards, defensemen, everyone, you just put them one to however many skaters there are in the league, and you sort them by points. There's not a blue in the top 100, I want to say. Let me give me a second to verify,
Scan,
but
yeah.
like it's not good. Like Robert Thomas, I believe, is the highest scoring blue at 14 points, and he's 151st in the league in scoring. And if all things were equal around the league, right, you'd expect one from every team every 32 players,
Roughly,
right?
yeah.
So you're basically five spots lower than you should be when you're at 151 instead of at 32, roughly speaking. So that's a lot. That's a lot of lost production from everyone. And the other day I was watching the Colorado game, and Nathan MacKinnon scored his 18th goal of the year. And I was like, what
Wow.
is, did that say 18? Is that 18th goal of the season? So some of these teams are just playing a different sport.
You mentioned earlier like how many of these games, you know, if just one bounce had gone the other way, how different this season might look. Could you imagine an 18 goal scorer on this team?
It's a lot of imagining.
I know, but see, we were talking about the cartoons and I just haven't made it all the way back yet. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't want to imagine too much. Yeah, that's rough, man. I knew it was bad, but I guess I didn't realize how bad it was compared to the rest of the league in a lot of ways. I'm just looking at it from a record perspective and, you know, to your point earlier, kind of scoreboard watching, which I suppose is probably a bad thing at this point in the season.
Yeah, I mean, if you take Thomas's season and you kind of stretched out to 82 games, which obviously he won't be playing 82 games since he already missed some due to injury, but that's 57 points in a season.
Would
So
that be a
that's
career low for a full season for him? That's bad in the
I think
last
he did
for
have
him.
a pretty rough year. I think it was the COVID shortened year, like
Oh,
the 2021 year.
yeah.
Yeah, he had 0.36 points per game that year,
Oof.
and this would be the lowest since then. But like, it's less that I think about less about Thomas's career and more like, hey, your leading scorer might put up 50 something points. Like that's rough.
Yeah.
That's not what a playoff team has on their roster. That's not what a future contender has on the roster. So I do believe like Thomas is a good player. Like I do believe
Agreed, yeah.
he has more production to give, but it's just one of those things where so many guys have so much production to give. And when we look at this last road trip, 1-1-3, three overtime losses. They get a point four out of five games, but they go 500 ultimately. What do you kind of think about this trip overall?
I was excited when it started, honestly. You know, the season had been kind of rough, and the team was talking about, hey, you know, you get on the road for 10, 11 days together. This is where you start to build a little brotherhood. And I thought, okay, maybe that's what's missing. Maybe that's the, you know, the trick. You get out there, you win a couple of games on the road, you come back refreshed, and all of a sudden we're off and running. And then we couldn't get off and running on the road trip. So that's not going to happen. That was my first thought, to be honest with you. My second was, you know, watching the way things changed throughout these games. Didn't matter the opponent, good, bad, or indifferent. The Blues didn't, you know, they never looked fully outclassed, but they never looked like they could outclass anybody. And that was, you know, it was kind of eye-opening because I felt like earlier in the season that there were times when they certainly felt outclassed. And yeah, a lot of that was when the goaltending was still getting right. And then there were times where they looked like they just were very clearly the better team on the ice, not necessarily dominating, but you know, these are the St. Louis Blues and we're here, you know, establishing kind of some presence and some dominance. None of that happened on this road trip. Like nothing, you know, there were some bright spots. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to act like this was just, you know, the worst thing in the world. Both the goalies looked pretty good on the road trip. Various players had, you know, good games or even great shifts at various, I mean, even Logan Mayhew had a couple of great shifts in there in his return. So, you know, it wasn't all bad, but man, just never enough to pull away or make a move or anything, just right there in the flow of the game, no matter what the game is. And that was disheartening to see.
Yeah. It felt like they were getting teams at the right time, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Toronto was missing the half of their lineup. I mean, they didn't have Austin Matthews or Matthew Nyes, Chris Tanev, Brandon Carlo, Nick Waugh, Anthony Stolarz. I think Scott Laughton was out. Like they had so many guys that just kind of called up. I think you looked at their bottom six and like those are AHL lines. Like they were playing a team that was decimated by injuries, and they couldn't beat them. Philadelphia, you thought they had them beat at home with two-goal leads. They blew those. They thought they had them beat on the road with a two-goal lead. They blew that one. Like it just felt like there was another one, missed opportunity there. Obviously, they beat the Islanders. I think you got a little hairy towards the end there. I think everyone watching the game kind of thought that they were going to blow another two-goal lead.
Yeah, I felt that way. I was already, you know, preemptively cussing before, you know, the game was over, and then felt bad because I didn't have to cuss anymore.
And then obviously the Rangers game where they have a chance in the third period, double minor, four-minute power play. Have a chance to, I believe at that point, I don't know if it's tie the game or just pull closer, but a missed opportunity there. And that's a Rangers team who had one win at home all season. So you had probably the worst home team in the league and nothing. And then even in New Jersey, they're facing a team without their best player in Jack Hughes. So they had a lot of these teams in a position where they could take advantage of, whether it's personnel missing, whether it's game situations, you know, score situations. Like it just felt like there were so many chances for them to do something. And instead they come away with 5 points in five games. And like, that's technically better than when they left because.
Yeah. And it could have been worse.
I mean, right. It should have been better.
Yeah, I know. You're absolutely right, and I think you make a great point about getting these teams at the right time. You know, I didn't realize Toronto's situation was quite that bad, but, you know, the Rangers game, for sure, that there was no reason that game should not have gone their way. Virtually everything looked, you know, on paper to be a Blues win, you know, or and I don't mean an easy win, but, like, should have been a better game than it was, and there should have been more to it. It just didn't happen. You know, I don't know how you fix that. I don't know. Like I said, I've talked about a spark. Maybe it's fight. Maybe it's, you know, I don't know, but I don't know what you do. But this pace is not enough. You know, we talked earlier about, you know, the Thanksgiving break and what it means for, you know, the stabilization of standings and eventually making the playoffs. This, at, you know, as we reach Thanksgiving, is not enough either, even if it is an improvement over where they were and certainly what it could have been.
Yeah, I think one of the other disappointing parts for me is the inability of the Blues to hold on to leads. And I'm not just talking the shiny two-goal leads that they blew against Seattle and Philly and I'm talking about their 1-0 leads. They scored first in all five games on the road in this during this trip.
They've scored like 9 of 10 games too.
Nine of ten, they've scored first. Yeah, nailed it. And they've scored first 15 times this year. Do you know how many they've won out of those 15?
Well, let's see. So we got 9 out of 10, 15. I'm gonna guess 14. Is it zero? They've won zero.
It's five. They've gone 5, 4, and 6. 5, 4, and 6 when they've scored first. And like losing 10 times, losing 2/3 of the time when you score first, that's crazy. Like if you think about it the other way, the opponent has scored first, I guess that would be 9 times, right? 9 times. And the Blues have won 2 of those. So opponents are 7-2 when they score first. And the Blues, on the other hand, are 5, 4, and 6, losing 10 times when they score first. So that's been disappointing that, yeah, that you can spot them a 1-0 lead and it almost doesn't even matter.
It's one of the, it makes me wonder though, like, how do you fix that? You know, like early on in the season when some of that was happening, you know, we were talking about bounces go their way, not going their way, but now it doesn't. You know, it's been long enough. This isn't just kind of a statistical anomaly anymore. This isn't just weirdness in a handful of games anymore. This is, I don't know if it's a cultural thing or if it's a game planning thing, or I can't identify it, to be honest with you. And not just because I don't know the game as well as you do. Like, I think maybe the Blues can't identify it either, which is why it's not been fixed. But, you know, there's, man, I don't know. You remember last season when it was the opposite problem, right? Never scoring first. And that was, you know, one of the troubles that they had. And then now we've gone the opposite direction and it's still trouble, which doesn't feel great.
Yeah. You know, sometimes if you're kind of a mediocre to a bad team, it just doesn't matter when the goals come, I guess. I think that's what I'm getting at, getting towards the point of like, yeah, the goals are going to happen that you give up, and so it doesn't really matter when you score because it's come back the other way at some point. Maybe it changes. It's going to have to if they want to make a push moving forward.
I'm glad that you're the one who said it in front of me because I have wanted to ask, like, is it possible that this is just a bad team? It hasn't felt like it, you know, but maybe it's time to start asking that question.
It's definitely possible. I think I had probably more hope for them earlier in the season when they were controlling games and when they had their outchancing opponents and they had more possession and it was just bad goaltending. That was the very easy explanation. But now I believe since the start of November, they're probably bottom five team in expected goals for, according to National Statric. So like they are not controlling games. They're making kind of some silly mistakes. It just doesn't feel like the same thought process from October, even though the results are, you know, more or less similar. It just feels like they're in a much worse spot because the goaltending is kind of better, but the team in front is not as good. And that's a lot harder, I think, to fix with all the different issues.
I think it's a harder pill to swallow too, right? Because the Blues have had in recent years some teams that were not great but had, you know, elite goaltending behind them who could, you know, help them hang around. And you know, I mean, in the last season, how many times did Binnington and Hofer steal games before that late season run, you know, just to keep them in it? And you didn't get that at the beginning of this season, and this season they're starting to do it, but the team in front of them is just not, you know, to your point, doesn't matter when the goals come, you know? So man, I'm just so glad that you were the one who said it because I have wanted to ask for like 2 weeks if they're just bad.
Yeah. It's definitely possible. I mean, I think you can see the personnel they have and see where a turnaround could happen. But at this point, there's so many different holes and so many different guys that have been inconsistent that you just wonder how does this get fixed and when does it get fixed? So I guess we'll see. And two more things before we finish this segment, moved on to segment 2, which will be taking some questions. We got some good feedback from listeners in the past week, and we'll get to a few of those in segment 2. But finishing up segment 1, You mentioned him earlier, Logan Mayhew, back in the NHL, recalled from Springfield. He played a couple games over the weekends. Seemed like a different kind of guy. Then he went down to go play in the AHL. Seemed more confident?
Yeah, you know, I think the results, I don't think were necessarily there, you know, in the stat sheet. And so I think it's certainly easy to go, oh, this didn't work. He's, you know, he's the same guy, but man, there were some shifts where he did not look like the same player. Like there was one, gosh, I can't remember which game it was now. It might've been, I think it was the Rangers game, but he blocked a shot and then was part of the hustle on a 2-on-1 on the other end. And just kind of that bang, bang, get up and go sort of play is the kind of thing you need whenever you're in the situation the Blues are in. And, you know, I don't think Mayhew, you know, he's a young guy. He's not accomplished at this level anyway yet. You know, I don't know if he can provide that spark, but man, there were a couple of shifts that I saw in the couple of games that he played on this trip where I thought, okay, kid does have it. Kid can go. It's a matter of just putting it together now at the NHL level. And I hope that the AHL stint has reinvigorated his mind so that he can get that going now.
Yeah. He looked more active, right? Like,
yeah. Active is like, a great way to
like
put it.
Wanting to skate, wanting to be involved. Like that seemed to be in a much better spot than when he got sent down. And I think when you look at this season in total, his confidence reemergence, whatever you want to call it,
That's exactly the way I was going to put it. Yeah.
Can kind of help alleviate some of those top 4 minutes that we've seen pile up. You know, I don't think it's any surprise that when he got back in the lineup, he was not paired with Tyler Tucker. That was something that Doug Armstrong mentioned when they sent Mayhew down, was we didn't put him in a good spot to succeed. We weren't very good as a team. And then we gave him an inexperienced partner and he was inexperienced himself. And then we sheltered him, and then suddenly you're playing 10 minutes a game and making 3 mistakes and going home -2 and not getting any better. Like it just, so I think it wasn't a surprise where they put Tucker with Falk, put Fowler with Mayhew, and can maybe distribute the minutes a little bit more. You know, obviously, you know, Broberg and Parayko still played some big minutes there.
Yeah.
But I think in the long term, you can kind of see where that can help them kind of give guys rest. Not have to ride them so hard, particularly when you look at the schedule. I mean, they have a back-to-back here. This is part of a 3-4. Like, there's going to be times where you can't just ride guys 25 minutes a night.
Right.
And if they can trust him to play a little bit better, if they can trust, you know, Tucker to play with Falk and play some more minutes there, I think it'll be kind of helpful to alleviate some of the bad things that have happened on defense because of how often they've been using Broberg, Parayko, Fowler, Falk.
Yeah, there was a shift on this road trip where Broberg was out there well over 2 minutes, and the guy's legs just looked like jelly. I mean, I felt bad for him. He looked like he could barely move until they finally cleared the puck and he was able to get off the ice.
Yeah, but I think it was an overtime game in Jersey. Yeah, it was.
And just, man, God, I mean, his legs look so stiff. I felt so bad for him. You know, the other thing about Mayhew coming back up and having his confidence back is, you know, I think when the trade happened last year, there was some concern because, of course, people loved Bull Duke for a number of reasons. And then you come into this season, Mayhew does not start so hot. Bull Duke does, looks great out of the gate. And then both of them taper off. Bull Duke has slowed down considerably. Neighbors goes down. Now, I think there were people who were like concerned, you know, fans who were concerned about the pipelines at that point, because you traded away a solid young for what you thought was anyway, a solid young forward for a defenseman who comes in and you maybe think is a bust, right? He goes down, comes back up, and it, you know, early in his time here in St. Louis, before he went down, you could kind of see he was hesitant to do stuff. It was almost like he didn't know what his role was or what was expected of him, you know, as he in, you know, not just on the ice, obviously, you know, what's expected of you on the ice, but like in the team hierarchy and things like that. You know, he goes down to the AHL, gets that confidence back. And like I said, comes up and has a few shifts during this road trip where this looks like, you know, all the pieces aren't there to go, oh, this guy's going to be a star, obviously. But there were a couple of things there where you go, okay, now I get the hype that, you know, there's some opportunity here for some growth, you know. And I think for those people who, on top of the panic about how bad this season has gone in terms of standings, were concerned that maybe you'd lost a young forward for a defenseman who isn't going to pan out, might be able to give them a little bit more confidence seeing some of the things he did on this road trip.
Yeah, you just got to see baby steps. You just got to see small things that can lead to big things. And for him to build his game, I mean, he's still played, what, less than 20, around 20?
Yeah, he's what, like 22 years old, something like that?
Yeah, so, he's probably played. Yeah, so he hasn't played a ton. And
no, he's got time.
Yeah. So last thing in 7-1, another Springfield-related thing. The Blues ended Milan Lucic's professional tryout in the AHL. Effectively ending his comeback bid with the team. Now, this is something we talked about maybe a few episodes back, where it was kind of a foregone conclusion in my mind that he was going to be signed to a contract because they gave him every opportunity. Yeah. They rehabbed him for a month. They sent him down to the AHL to get his game right. Like, they gave him a lot of rope, so to speak. They gave him 2 months within the organization. Like, that's not a typical thing for a professional tryout and training camp. And so, you know, I was kind of under the impression, hey, like, they're giving him all of these different things, and I think we'll see him in the NHL at some point. But it just turned out in the AHL, just wasn't good enough down there to be considered a factor in the NHL.
Yeah, and that's concerning, right? Like, he did not for the Blues, right? But for him, he didn't look great in the AHL. How do you think he's going to look in the NHL? Yeah. And I was kind of with you. I thought, you know, you commit that much resources to a guy, at some point you're going to bring him in. But I, you know, the truth is, I think it's a good thing at the end of the day. You know, the Blues realized, hey, look, there's nothing here, cut bait, and got out of it instead of making a bigger mistake in bringing him up to the NHL and you know, taking away minutes from guys who are producing there, even if it's not the level you might want to, you know. So I think it's a good thing at the end of the day. You know, the Blues took a shot. It didn't work out. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really affect anything other than the time and money you spent for 2 months.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is they've got 14 forwards in the NHL. They just, you know, waived and terminated Alexander Tetsier's contract. So they have enough bodies, and they're struggling to get ice time for all 14 of those guys. You know, Nick Bjugstad's been a healthy scratch for a while. Matthew Joseph's been a healthy scratch for a little bit of time. Sundqvist has gone in and out. Torpchenko just ate a healthy scratch the other night. So they've had a lot of guys that they're trying to get ice time that they just, like, don't have space for. And it's tough to see where Lucic would fit into that overall hierarchy within the forward group. So, you know, I think, you know, a lot of different reasons. He's a 37-year-old winger who's slow, and when he was in the league 2 years ago, wasn't that good. And that's right before you kind of factor in, you know, the off-ice stuff with the domestic abuse charge that was ultimately dropped in Boston. So a lot going on, but ultimately I think it was a hockey decision not to move forward with Lucic. And with that, we'll finish up with segment one. Get to your questions in segment two coming up next. And welcome back to the second segment of NetFront Presence, which is a currently unnamed segment. We're taking some listener questions and don't quite know what to call this segment. Like, what do you got, Nathan?
I feel like we should maybe, you know, if we're taking questions from listeners, maybe we should take suggestions from readers. Like, if you've got a good hockey themed pun, because I love puns, for, you know, like a mailbox type segment, that's it, that's the name. But I'm just not smart enough to come up with one, I don't think, yet.
The only thing that I was brainstorming a little bit would be like tipping pucks, just because this is Netfront Presence, you know.
Okay.
So someone shoots and someone has to be on the business end of it.
That's pretty good.
That's all I got, but it doesn't feel very strong. So
no, listen, It's not the strongest, but it is the strongest we have right now. And I think that's the important thing.
You know, that's kind of a motto for life. You know, it's not the best, but it's the best we have right now.
I say that to my kids regularly just to get through the day. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Nathan, why don't you take us through question one?
You got it. Question one comes from David, who tells us he's the only hockey fan in Columbia, Missouri. I don't know if that's true, but it might be.
Could be.
David says he's thought for years that the Blues should, or if they were able to, rather, buy and move AHL affiliate Springfield, the Thunderbirds, to St. Louis, that they could own the market from October through April. He says they could play down in a scaled-down, single-bowl enterprise center with cheaper tickets for more and more fans who are being priced out of pro sports. He said he could even play in the arena in St. Charles. I don't know about that, but that's his suggestion. He said the team could play on Blues off nights, and he asks, what would the barriers be to that? Would it mainly be the cost? And then is it a question of the owners of the Blues not having the means, or maybe just not wanting to bother another team, Springfield? And then he mentions geography. Would geography be a problem despite the AHL's presence in the Midwest, in Iowa, Rockford, Chicago, et cetera?
Yeah, so to answer the question, David, I think you probably nailed it right there. Geography is the biggest thing that Springfield has going for them. There's a lot of times that they don't even have to get hotels for road games because Hartford is so close, Bridgeport's so close, Providence is so close. They have so many teams within a really short driving distance, to be quite honest, that they don't need to have a bunch of extra travel costs. They just kind of bus around everywhere. Like it's a very nice setup for them in Springfield when you have a lot of teams so close. And I think like that's the biggest part for me, where you don't have to have so many travel costs, and especially for an AHL team that's already probably pretty tight money wise like yeah. That's a big expense that you don't have to do. Springfield as a franchise is different from a lot of other AHL teams. I think it's becoming increasingly popular for NHL teams to buy AHL teams, kind of bring them under the same umbrella and move them kind of wherever they want to. You know, there's been a lot of examples recently. I think there's one in Calgary, where, you know, the Flames, their affiliate used to be in Stockton, California, used to be Stockton Heat, and then they moved them to Calgary. Like they have the AHL team and the NHL team both in Calgary. The Vegas Golden Knights, they bought the San Antonio Rampage, former AHL affiliate of the Blues. And so they bought them, moved them to Henderson, which is a suburb of Las Vegas. The Texas Stars, they used to be in Iowa. They used to be the Iowa Stars. The Stars ownership group bought them, moved them to Austin. So like even San Jose, they used to be based in Worcester, Massachusetts. They moved them to San Jose. So they are also in the same city. So you have a bunch of these examples where NHL teams buy their AHL franchises and then move them to either the city that they're located in or a city close to them. And so, yeah, it's not out of the question. I think it's we've seen it happen around the league, but I think the difference here is Springfield, with their geography, is so advantageous. Whereas, let's say the Blues bought Springfield, moved them to the St. Louis area, right? Whether that's at Enterprise downtown or whether they are playing in Maryland Heights at Centene, or whether they're at Family Arena out in St. Charles. Like they have a few different options, but you look at where their teams would be, where the other AHL teams would be. And yes, there's Rockford, there's Chicago, there's Milwaukee, there's Iowa. So like they're close enough, but what, Rockford is 3 hours or so?
Something like that.
3 hours, 4 hours, or whatever from St. Louis. And that's probably the closest you'd have. So like, even those, it's not beating the half hour from Springfield to Hartford or the hour from Springfield to Providence. And I think this is one thing that I learned when I was covering the Stars, was when the Texas Stars moved to Austin, or Cedar Park, it's right outside Austin. They had a team in San Antonio. They had a team in Houston. They had franchises that were around. You know, they had teams that they could kind of get around to pretty easily. I believe San Antonio was, what, an hour and a half from Austin. Houston, probably about the same. And, you know, San Antonio no longer exists. As a city, it's still around, but the
whole city's gone.
Yeah,
it's just just disappeared.
Yeah, the Riverwalk is still there and everything.
Charles Barkley roasted them so hard, the whole city's just gone.
The Alamo, we've all remembered it. So
yeah,
San Antonio as a city remains there, but the Rampage are gone. Obviously, the Houston Aeros are gone. So the Texas Stars are basically on an island in terms of AHL teams, and their closest team to them might be Colorado, like the Colorado Eagles. That might be the closest one to them.
Yeah.
And it's not a situation where a potential AHL affiliate in St. Louis would be the same thing, but it would not be the same thing as the Northeast. And even when you look out west, there's so many teams that are out west now. Like the Kings have the Ontario Reign that's in the same area as LA. Mm-hmm. The Ducks have the San Diego Gulls, which is, you know, an hour or two to their south. Like there's a team in Tucson. There's a team in Palm Springs. There's a team in Henderson outside of Las Vegas. So like even that cluster, they're all pretty close. So I think geography does play a huge factor in this. And I think also the willingness of an organization to kind of buy another franchise and want to run another franchise. You have to want to do that. Not saying that the Blues ownership doesn't want to do that, but they haven't given an indication that they do want to.
Yeah, that seems like a thing that if they wanted to, you would know, you know. Yeah. So somebody would know, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Matt, our second question comes from Twitter user. I thought it was X user. I'm sorry. I thought his username was Zinster, but I think it's Z Neister. And Z wants to know, regarding Broberg and Holloway, when would you expect contract extensions to be done for either of them? And would be Broberg priced above 1825's contract based on other teams' young – well, I missed that – based on how much other teams' young defensemen are getting paid?
Yeah, so this has been kind of Doug Armstrong's response every time he's been asked about Broberg and Holloway's contracts. Has been, hey, we're in no rush. You know, they are RFAs. We have control over that. We're going to leave enough space so that they themselves don't get offer sheeted again. And they're going to be okay. So there's always been like not much of a rush there. I think that's why we saw the Cam Fowler deal done before we see anything from Broberg and Holloway. And right now, if I'm Broberg or Holloway, I want the chance to produce. You know, I think, you know, Holloway had a breakout season last year. It probably would have been a great time to sign the contracts in the offseason, maybe set the market, because so many teams didn't know what the market was going to be like. But that's also the reason why the Blues didn't want to do that, because they wanted to see what the other deals looked like first before they were the first ones in, and they were the first ones signing deals when they didn't actually have to. They weren't in a position to have to do it. They won't be in a position to have to do it until October of next season, right? Like, they're going to have a lot of time to get these things done. So with the caveat that things can change at any point, like last year, I didn't anticipate Jake Neighbors being signed to an extension when he was signed, but he got his done and the Blues got his done and he was signed. So, yeah, so I don't see it happening just based on the dates and the timing of things, all that soon. And then as far as value of it, let's go with Broberg, since Z Neister mentions all the young defensemen that were been signed under this rising cap situation. Looked on Puckpedia, RFA defenseman signed to a cap hit over 5 mil, and Broberg's going to be above 5 mil, but just put it at that setting just because what he's making right now. Mm-hmm. Thomas Harley in Dallas, 8 years, 10.6 roughly. Lane Hutson in Montreal, 8 years, 8.85. Jackson Lacombe in Anaheim, 8 years, $9 million. Luke Hughes in New Jersey, 7 years, $9 million. I don't think Broberg is going to be approaching those numbers just based on a pure counting perspective. Like, these guys are 40, 50 plus point season guys.
Right.
Lane Hutson put up 60 something. Like, I know they're defensemen, they have other jobs, but when you look at salaries, guys get paid for producing points. That's just the reality of it. And Broberg, for as good as he can be, I think in last year and this year, he's averaged per 82 games about 33 points. So, like, you're not looking at the same class of guys, I think, with those types of deals. And maybe you go a little bit further. Bo Byram in Buffalo signed that 2 year contract that lost him to UFA at a 6.25. That you have Keandre Miller, which I think could be a pretty good comp, to be quite honest. With the he signed it with New York, but it was really a deal with the Hurricanes, 8 years at 7.5. So I think that, given usage, given production, the Keandre Miller one could be a decent comp. 7.5, it would set a new bar for Blues defensemen. I mean, 6.5 has been the barrier for a long time in St. Louis, even dating back to Alex Pietrangelo's previous deal. That set the stage for Faulk, for Parayko, for Krug. It's funny, even Cam Fowler, his overall cap hit is 6.5, but he's only costing $4 million on the Blues cap this year. So, like, 6.5 has been the barrier in St. Louis for a while. And I think with the rising cap, with Broberg, his age, his production, his usage, like, he's going to go past that. I think Miller at 7.5 is a decent comparison, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him maybe go a little bit higher. I don't see it around that Thomas Kyrou 8.125 million,
Yeah.
but I don't know exactly.
Well, you said earlier, you know, this season he's been Broberg's been one of, if not the Blues' best player. You know, so maybe there is something to a little bonus for that. But you know, at the end of the day, I think you're right. You know, defensemen just they just don't bring the points the way generally anyway, though the hasn't been the case for the Blues this season, the way some of your forwards do. You know, and so obviously the salaries are always going to be a little bit different. But you mentioned Holloway, you know, wanting some time to produce. Maybe the case is the same for Broberg. Maybe he wants a shot at that 40-point season so he can clear some of those higher plateaus for salary. Goes both ways.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a good point too. I mean, just because he just doesn't get power play time, and so you're missing those offensive situations, and even 6-on-5 situations. It's Faulk and Fowler out there, and even some of the power play minutes went to Mailloux. Like, it just doesn't seem like he's getting those types of minutes to be able to produce the counting stats that are required to get those big ticket items, you know?
Yeah, no, that makes total sense to me. And then our last question, Matt, comes from the legendary Kazi. Could you please clarify what is happening with Bjugstad? We talked a little bit about him earlier. It's puzzling why a player who was expected to contribute both in the middle and on the wing is now sitting out 4 of the last 5 games. Is he in the doghouse, being kept under wraps? He said he thought he looked sharp during the Islanders game and remembers him being a sizable presence with Minnesota, disrupting on their forecheck and creating scoring opportunities. He's wondering why he's not doing that here.
Yeah, I don't have a good answer for this because, yeah, you're right. I mean, Bjugstad has kind of produced decently. I think, well, I'll follow up with Jim Montgomery about this topic, but I think it probably comes down to playing style more than anything. He's not skilled enough to be one of your top three centers. Even when you look at Thomas, Dvorsky, Suter, Shen, like, he's not producing like that, or has the potential to produce like that, I should say. And then you look at the fourth line, and whether it's Joseph, Toropchenko, Sundqvist, Walker, like, those are guys who bring a lot of jam to the game. And that's not really Nick Bjugstad's MO. So yeah, it is puzzling because like this is a guy who has been who's like counted on to be part of their 12. They signed to a multi-year contract. Like this is something where it is a surprise to see him scratch this often, but I think it probably comes down more to playing style than anything. But we'll follow up with Jim Montgomery, see what he has to say about it.
When you say playing style, you mean just not fitting a certain identity of the club in general, or not fitting an identity for a specific line, or
for a specific line? You know, like when you look at whether it's Torpchenko, Sundqvist-Walker, Joseph Sundqvist-Walker, like those are guys who are throwing the body around, who are the winners, at least are fast on the forecheck. They are hitting, they're kind of setting a tone, and that's not really Bjugstad's game. Like over the offseason, I think when the Blues let Radek Foxa go and go back to Dallas and Nick Bjugstad was brought in, like he was viewed as kind of a Foxa replacement, but like that was not going to be the case in my eyes, just because it plays such a different kind of game. Like Bjugstad, he used to be a winger with Alexander Barkov in Florida. Like he was used to be that sort of offensive guy. And then as his career has gone on, he's had to find different roles in different teams, but it's never really been who he is to be that rock'em sock'em, get in on the forecheck, kind of muck things up and create energy. That just hasn't been his game. So I wonder if it's more of that and just seeing the juice that Joseph brought in that Jersey game, or that Walker, Sundqvist, Torpchenko can all bring at certain times. And I think the other thing, he was probably penciled in as a third line right wing to start the season, and that spot has more or less been taken by Dvorsky, by him going to center, by moving Suter down, by pushing Shen to a wing and pushing another winger out. Like that's basically how the dominoes have fallen, with Dvorsky coming up and taking a spot in the NHL, and just has left the Blues with too many forwards, and Bjugstad's been kind of that guy. But I think it'll be interesting to find out soon what Jim Montgomery says about why Nick Bjugstad has been scratched so much.
It may be something worth talking to Montgomery and maybe Armstrong about, but what kind of options do you see them having for a guy like Bjugstad, who you mentioned earlier has a longer term contract and already at the very beginning of it is a healthy scratch as often as he has been? Is this, is he a candidate for a move? Is he just going to be a healthy scratch forever? I mean,
you need depth, right? Like I don't think they're in a position to really call it yet on him. I think it's pretty early. So, I think they'll probably just see how he responds when he does come back, because injuries happen, performance, kind of ineffectiveness happens. So, I think the depth helps when you have a guy like him around, at least.
Yeah, I think, to your point, having 14 forwards and, as physical a game as it can be, and we've already seen Thomas miss some time, it's only a matter of time. And so, those opportunities are going to open back up. Well, whether it's him or someone else, somebody's going to get an opportunity. And so we might get to see him take advantage of one of those and then earn some more ice time,
Yeah. That was our first mailbag
tipping pucks
segment. I don't know. We'll have to workshop it a little bit.
Okay, I got it. Which tipping pucks? We get country music star Aaron Tippin to do a theme song for it. Sponsor it.
I have no idea who that is.
Oh my goodness! You don't know pro wrestling. You don't know Aaron Tippin. You and me, we got to hang out more.
You know what? If you said Aaron Tippin, I would have no idea if that was a man or a woman.
It's AA. It's AA, Ron Tippin.
All right. Yeah. So, but that was Net Front Presence for this week. On that note, thanks for listening. Hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving. I'm Matt. He's Nathan. See you next week.